Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to Lost in the Static,
Josh. 150th episode.
Yeah, 150 episodes. Let's go right ahead and rattle off that Adam and Eve promo for
me. Yes, because we have a guest.
Exactly.
Go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code STATIC, and you'll get 50% off of a single item. Not one, not two, but three free DVDs, a free mystery gift, and free U.S. shipping, all for using the promo code STATIC at adamandeve.com. So, Ben from the Oddity Archive, would you go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code STATIC?
Only if I could get my porno on Betamax.
I'm sure you could. But, yeah, joining us for episode 150 is what could be the most popular cardboard box on the internet. Ben from the Oddity Archive, if you haven't checked it out, either on YouTube, just search up Oddity Archive or Blip. And I got to admit, I discovered your show just a couple of weeks ago and sat down and in one marathon, huge just marathon of happiness, I watched every episode you've put out so far, and I'm looking forward to more.
And then you know what he did after that, Ben? He emails me on Facebook, why has this guy not been on our show? So tell us, first of all, why'd you start Oddity Archive?
Burnout, unemployment, underemployment, a number of reasons. But it wasn't going to be a show initially. It was going to be a blog at first. But I realized in my writing that I wanted to discuss stuff that was largely video, like the Max Headroom incident or whatever. And then I was writing stuff out, and I found, well, you know, my jokes aren't coming through in the written word. And I think a lot of people could misconstrue this. Maybe I should go to the next level, and it's just kind of snowballed from there.
Snowballed good or bad?
A little of both.
Because I found your stuff to be very, very funny, very informative, and I'm not 100% sure of your age, but I think you're around the same era that Scott and I are. And I loved seeing those old American Triple Ecstasy promos that you found and all the old VCRs and your little CED laser disc discussion. That brought me back.
Okay.
So I got to ask you, though, in all honesty, how'd you find those American Triple Ecstasy promos? Because I've been looking for years for tapes of those. YouTube? Oh, we seem to have a wicked Skype delay here. Because I found the one with the not so attractive woman in the overalls.
And the Sherwin Williams hat, yeah.
Yeah, and I was showing that one to Scott. But where'd you find those other ones with the actual bumpers and everything?
Kind of rooting around. They might not even be on YouTube anymore. And one was from a site that was calling itself 80s Beta, but I don't remember that much about it. But, you know, when I find something like that, it's not going to make a lot of people real happy to hear this, but I tend to just try and quick grab a copy because you know how the internet is. One thing's there, 1 second, gone the next.
Well, yeah. Well, then what about, because like, you had those old VHS tapes. Were those actually on the VHS tapes that you found in the episode?
Oh, no.
Ah, damn it.
That was just a plot device, by the way. Those were Newhart reruns.
Okay.
Which one? Original Newhart or 80s Newhart?
80s Newhart.
Because that makes a big difference.
What?
I like them both.
Well, because 80s Newhart technically didn't exist because at the end of that he wakes up.
The last episode, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a dream that he had in original Newhart.
Yeah, or he just pretend it doesn't exist.
So... What's the strangest thing you've encountered in the archive? Is it something you haven't put up yet?
Well, Max Headroom would rate pretty high on that list. The Happy Hamster would probably be pretty far up on there. You know, after a while, when you start spending a lot of time with this stuff, you just sort of, it becomes second nature to you. So I'm not sure if I can even gauge weird anymore.
So what motivated you? I mean, I know you talked about burnout and stuff like that, but, you know, to tell you the truth, I've been there, and I've been often in the case of I don't know what to do. I want to do something, and that's kind of how this show got started. But what motivated you to look into things like teletext or the old I forget what it was, but the British Cold War preparedness films that you looked at?
Survive.
There we go. Thank you. Protect and Survive. What motivated you to get into this stuff, and how long have you kind of been looking at it and studying it?
You know, it's just a quirky interest. I'm not sure what really prodded me. Maybe it was watching too much TV as a kid. Maybe it's confronting those childhood fears. Like, the emergency broadcast system used to make me run for cover at 4 years old. But I guess it's sort of like that. And, you know, just like I said, weird interests, I guess.
Don't feel too bad about the emergency broadcasting system. That made me run, too. Of course, I grew up in Tornado Alley, so I guess rightfully so. Do you have any holy grails or anything that you have been searching for and would like to find out there?
I'd like to find the foreign equivalents of the emergency broadcast system. And, I'm really drawing a blank right now. Of course, I'm always on the lookout for weird local commercials, but I can't think of a real great holy grail at the moment. I try not to focus too much on that.
Do you look for specific things? Like, you say, hey, I'm going to do this for a specific episode, or do you just kind of see what you run across and then go, I can build an episode around this?
It's a little of both. And also, sometimes it's viewer suggestions, so it's kind of a nice stew.
Well, how do you go about collating an episode then? Do you just, okay, I need this bit of information, and then I got to find video for this? Or does it just kind of all fall into place and however you happen to bring it about?
You know, it's been every conceivable way. I've had episodes just fall in line. I've had episodes where I'll spend weeks searching for info. I've had them all points in between. I wish I had a better answer for that one.
It's the best answer I could imagine.
If it's the truth, then it's a fine answer.
Which it is. I wouldn't lie to you.
Well, good. So what can we expect in the future? What are some things that you're wanting to cover? I know you talked about foreign equivalents to the EAS and stuff like that.
EBS. But
EBS or now EAS. Did you not watch that episode? He goes over all that.
I did. Shut up. It's the emergency broadcast system as far as I'm concerned.
Right. So what can we expect in the future?
Well, I've been trying to get season 2 underway here, which will premiere on the 4th of July. And that will be, because it happens to fall on the 4th of July, I figured I'd try and be good and patriotic. And I decided to do the great cash-in of America in recent history, which would be the Bicentennial from 1976. So I've got the ephemeral films, and I've got commercials and Up With People. And then after that, I've got an episode on deck for Sound Like Records, Rip Off Records. I've got a handful of VHS vault ideas going. I have, I don't want to spill all the beans. I've spent the day today, and as soon as I'm done here, I'm going to go back to editing the latest archive episode, which will be on, it'll be the first one to tackle radio stuff.
Okay. Well, and then I've seen in a lot of the episodes, you've got lots of old tech. How much old tech do you actually have? Because I'm kind of a hermit when it comes to that myself.
Let's see. I've got 3 Laserdisc players, which is my biggest collection. I've got the CED. Unfortunately, it's just a very low-end mono unit. And I've got a Betamax and a VHS, of course. I recently acquired an 8-track deck. I've got vinyl and tapes and, you know, a fair garden variety. There's stuff I'd like to have, like a U-matic or something like that.
Well, unfortunately, we're getting some breakup on your end, so I don't know if we're going to have to cut this short or not, but...
No, it happens.
Yeah, because we're getting a lot of breakup on your end here.
It's okay. We'll power through this. Now, you mentioned the U-matic and that you've been searching for one of those for a while and stuff like that. I can tell you that when I first started interning at a Fox station in Evansville, I actually shot on 3/4-inch videotape, and I think that some of the TV stations that we've worked for may have a U-matic or 5 stuck in their garage somewhere. So I don't know. I'll keep my eye out for you, but I've seen them. They still exist along with the old, I think the station we used to work for even had an old 1-inch reel to reel video.
Yes. It didn't work though. It didn't work.
Unfortunately.
Because I actually have the switchboard from the master control office from when they switched that out. I took that when they threw it away. So I actually have an old TV station switchboard. What I wanted to do, Ben, was hook it up to my TV to make the most complicated remote control of all time. I just can't figure out how to do it.
That makes two of us.
So if... How do you acquire some of this stuff? Just Goodwills? Do you get them donated, or you just run across them at garage sales? What is it?
I'm a pretty loyal thrift store dweller. I'll hit the odd flea market and stuff like that. eBay.
Excellent. eBay is definitely one of the best sources out there.
If you want to get soaked on prices and shipping, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't get a choice.
Yeah, when you run across that really, really rare item, you just gotta have it.
Yeah.
So has there been anything out there? I mean, you reference the Max Headroom incident all the time, and Josh and I have actually covered it on our show more than once. But is there anything out there that really surprised you when you were doing research for what you were doing? Was there anything that really caught you off guard
With the Max Headroom thing?
Well, not just with Max Headroom, but with your show in general. What was I guess the better way of phrasing it would be, what was the most surprising piece of information that you'd found?
I really can't think of anything offhand. I think Telefirst would probably be one of those bigger shocks, and just how weird it was.
I personally liked all the research that you seemed to do into the old pay cable one. All those weird pay cable stations that were like in just a specific state and whatnot, or how Chicago wouldn't take HBO until, was it the mid-80s?
1985.
Yeah, and that kind of shit. You know, it seems like you actually do your research on this, which is far more than some internet critics can do. But there's also the fact that even sometimes you find out stuff later, like you in the commentary for the Max Headroom video pointed out, you maybe found out who maybe did the Max Headroom incident after the fact.
No, I didn't. That was a Reddit article that I don't entirely believe.
Well, it's Reddit, so.
But it got me to shift my thinking on it, and I think I have an idea of the type that would have done it, but I have no idea who specifically.
Okay. Well, we're probably gonna let you go here because you are cutting out like crazy.
But that's okay, and I apologize. I definitely appreciate your time being here, and if our listeners want to find you out there, where would they go?
blip.tv/oddityarchive or facebook.com/oddityarchive.
All right. Thank you so much, Ben, and thank you for being part of our 150th episode.
Okay. And if you need to talk to me again, I have a computer, believe it or not. So if you want to try and contact me again.
I
when there's a better connection, yeah. So that's the only reason we're cutting this short is it's really bad on our end here.
Yeah, and that may be my end or something like that. There is no blame on this one. But I definitely appreciate your time, and we do want to talk to you again. Would you be willing to come back on the show when you get a little bit closer to season two, and we can talk about what episodes you're going to be releasing then?
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben.
All right. Thank you.
I'll just pause it. All right. So we're sorry about the connection issue.
Yeah.
Scott's not 100% sure whether it was on Ben's end or not.
I think it was my end. We've got some storms rolling into town, and my computer was giving us issues even before we started, and even now it's being kind of stupid. So
I still see your little working icon on everything.
Yeah, it's strange. But nonetheless, that was Ben from Oddity Archive. Archive.
Good boy.
Definitely go check it out.
I really like his show.
I do too.
Like I pointed out to him, I love the fact that he does the research and finds out about the topics he's talking about. Because I'm a big tech nerd when it comes to that kind of stuff.
When it comes to the video tech and stuff like that, yeah.
I didn't know about some of the like those old pay cable services that he talked about and was able to show fucking promos or logos and shit for.
Right. He did an entire show on the what is now the EAS, originally the Emergency Broadcast System, and where it came from. And it's amazing, but Ben has the ability to take really dry topics. I mean, teletext, the EBS, the old, nuclear war is never really a dry topic, but the old protect and survive videos from Britain and stuff like that, and really make them amazingly entertaining. Obviously does some major research for
it's
every
not
episode
just thrown
he puts
together
out.
Like certain internet critics we can speak of.
Or like certain radio shows that are, you know, produced in the guy's basement.
This isn't your basement, it's just a second level.
Well, it's half underground.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
It's a half basement.
But no, I was actually the one episode I liked the best is the one that you can't find on YouTube. The American Triple Ecstasy and Spice channel.
Yeah, that one's on Blip only.
But yeah, because he was afraid of getting kicked off YouTube when he showed that one. Because I've got that American Triple Ecstasy commercial. I mean, I saw it on YouTube, but a friend of mine, we saw that when we were kids. Mm-hmm. I don't know if his dad had that, the channel, or if just that promo aired on other channels to try and entice you to getting that. But well, I guess we should explain what American Triple Ecstasy is for people.
Okay, please do.
Guys, now you got to put yourself into a 1984 mindset here, all right? The satellites, do you remember the era where C-band was starting to scramble HBO?
The big honking dishes.
Well, but you remember when they started scrambling all this? Because you used to be able to just steal them right from the air.
Right. And you would even get, you know, clear feeds from NBC of their reporters picking their nose or whatever and stuff like that. But,
And then they started scrambling them, and then you got you had to start paying for them. Then the Captain Midnight incident happened where he hacked in the middle of Falcon and the Snowman, which made that movie much better. But that's not the point. And basically what happened is you know, Playboy was there, the Playboy channel, but, you know, soft course, you know, shit. So you had all these upstart hardcore pay networks like the Spice Channel and American Triple Ecstasy. It's EXXX. Ha ha, subtle.
Yeah.
Where they would show full uncut hardcore movies.
Okay.
Now keep in mind the era I said, 1984. You had to buy your own decoder box.
Right.
$699.
$699.1984. Yeah.
Just to watch porno movies on your television. If you didn't have it. And you gotta remember, these were kind of movies that were not exactly on VHS at this point. So
right.
That's a lot to watch hardcores.
Yes. Yes, it is.
That's a lot to. And then eventually what happened is the channel didn't go under because of people not wanting to buy it.
Okay. What happened?
Not FCC, federal complaints. People actually complain. It's up in the air. Some people say one movie, some people say another movie. But some movie, they got one of the areas that they broadcast to declared legally obscene. And so they were hit with broadcasting obscene material over the airwaves.
Ah.
Even to paying consenting adults. And the channel eventually went under. Ben talked about it a little bit in his thing. He showed the crawl, but it doesn't say what movie it was that got them in so much trouble. So honestly, I'm curious about that. I really want to know because I want to find that movie if I don't have it. Don't look at me like that. You know how I am.
No, I'm just thinking there's a good chance you probably already have it.
That's a possibility. But
and you may have even talked about it on your...
On Radiodrome or something. I don't know.
Not just Radiodrome. The one that you do on Geek Juice.
Oh, coming Attractions?
Thank you, Coming Attractions. La, 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 la.
Yes, with the obvious spelling.
Yes. And but yeah, I mean, not only that, but he talked about the pre-cable pay TV, like the stuff that you could only get in New York.
It was kind of pay as you go, yeah, really.
Or Chicago, which he even noted seems to be the birthplace of all things pay TV.
It's not wrong.
That's true. But yeah, the pre-cable pay deals, and you would, you know, I just picture if somebody wanted all these channels having this stack of 7 or 8 decoder boxes all
in
line.
If you're some Hollywood
star
that could afford,
exactly.
Okay, this is my Triple Ecstasy box, this is my Playboy box, this is my HBO box, this is my Select TV box.
Exactly.
And so forth. Yeah, it's just insane. I remember a friend of mine had a C-band dish, and first of all, we're so used to nowadays with digital cable, you flip the channel, it's right to the next channel, right?
Yeah.
No.
Not on C-band.
C-band, you flip the channel, and the dish would go,
oh, yeah.
And have to reposition. It could be a full minute before, and that's just to check what else is on.
Yeah.
It could be a full minute for that dish to realign before you get a signal.
And sometimes if you knew what channel and you put in the direct channel to send it to, and it had to really rotate around.
If it had to go almost all the way around.
It was get up, go make a sandwich, you know, have a meal.
And sometimes the dish wouldn't operate the way you would think it would. Like, say you're at 12 degrees and you're going to the channel that's at 10 degrees. Well, it doesn't usually, at least on the ones that my friend had, it didn't go backwards. It had to go all the way around to get back to 10. So you'd pull an almost 360, which is a full 3 or 4 minute swing time.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, okay, why can't I just go back 2 degrees? Why do I have to go forward the rest of this?
358 degrees.
Yeah, this is stupid.
Well, I remember and back when I worked at Radio Shack, when I first started there, it was the end of their C-band era. Now, this is Radio Shack. And for those that don't know, Radio Shack gets a technology and freaking holds on to it for years after nobody is using it. And so they had C-band dishes and decoders and stuff available clear up into the late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, yeah. Remember, I was big in the bootlegging scene in the late 90s. That's where I had a friend who had an internet friend who was one of my main contacts.
Sure.
He had a C-band dish. He would get network shit weeks in advance. Like, The Simpsons, Fox would send, because this is the way at least it was done to some stations. I don't know how, I mean, this is the way it was done when we worked at 26 and 32 as well, that the base, so Fox Corporate, either in New York or Los Angeles, would beam out the signal to all of the Fox affiliates, who would then have their dishes tuned to a certain frequency with a certain decoder, and they would pull that down. Well, this guy I knew exactly where all these were, and he knew their relative transmission times. He could pull down 6 weeks worth of brand new Simpsons episodes at once.
Oh, sure.
So, I mean, here I am watching The Simpsons a month and a half before they air. And he would do that for Profiler episodes, NCIS, Simpsons. I mean, he had this whole list of, tell me which ones you want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, ooh, I'll take that. And not only do you get them early, you would get them clean, no corner bugs or you know, watch, I'm Married by a Millionaire Tonight dancing across the bottom of your screen or any of that. It was completely clean, full credits, and no commercials.
Sure.
So it was almost like getting the DVD version of an episode and early.
Now, one of his most popular episodes that are out there are on the Format Wars, where he talks about, you know, the big one, of course, being VHS versus Beta.
Yeah.
But
Beta lost.
Then, yeah, Beta lost, even though it was better, technically.
In some senses. No, because Ben pointed out properly the time issue.
Yeah.
That Beta, it was better sound quality, better video quality, but that's only if you were recording at the top speed, which meant you could only get an hour onto a tape. Same problem with Laserdisc.
Right.
Better than VHS, but you can only get 50-some minutes onto a side.
And who wants to flip a disc over?
That's why you get an auto flip. I've got an auto flip Laserdisc player. It's got a laser on the top and the bottom.
But the one format that really surprised me and that I knew very little about. I had first heard about it actually from the Angry Video Game Nerd was where I very first heard about it. And he never really explained it other than, yeah, it comes in this sleeve and you have to load it and it could be a pain in the ass. And I'm
aligning a fucking CED into that thing, because I think Ben even showed it where it kind of would go in and pop back out. And go in. It's like, accept it, just go in.
Exactly, it's like a virgin on prom night. But the but what a CED or what is it, capacitive?
Don't even ask me what it stands for. I don't know.
A capacitive is if a disc.
It's a
exactly yeah, but. As he explained it, it was finally, in a way that I understood, was basically a video record player. It literally had a needle, and it was a grooved record that played video signals as well. Mm-hmm. And I got to admit, he played a little bit of basically a scratched CED, or one that didn't read quite right from his Three Stooges deal. And just watching that was both frustrating, fascinating, and hilarious at the same time. It's the first time I've ever laughed at the Three Stooges because they're dumb.
Easy for you to say, huh? Because there was a used store in Green Bay that had a CED player. They outright said it was broken. So, I was a little weary
there.
You're
like, eh, no.
Well, because, sometimes these things, broken might mean it needs a new fuse or just a new belt. I mean, it could be a 5-cent fix.
Right.
But they said it was broken, and it was like $25 for the broken CED player and like 12 discs. And I'm like, Muppet movie. Hello, Giorgio, whatever. And I'm like, there's like 4 Star Trek episodes in here. There was like 4 classic Treks in there. I was like, it was one of those, do I risk being able to repair this or not? Damn it.
Yes.
I chose not to because I didn't have the money. But somebody did. It was gone 2 weeks later when
That's
I went back
shame.
In there. So somebody bought it and maybe they fixed it. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
But I was just curious I have these Star Treks on Laserdisc, but I kind of want to just watch classic Star Trek on a CED just because,
just to see what it's like.
Yeah, just because.
But you had the CED, which absolutely fascinated me. I don't know why I find that little bit of antiquated technology fascinating. But
is it a surprise now, knowing what you know about it, that Laserdisc beat the holy hell out of it?
No, it's not a surprise. It's a surprise to me that CEDs ever worked at all.
Odds are they really didn't. I think they probably had a failure rate of over 50%.
Well, no doubt.
It was just it was a pretty ill-conceived format to begin with, man.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, how many times could you listen to a vinyl record, music record, before it just died?
Yeah, I mean, like with Laserdisc, at least, not only did that make the picture quality better, it made the audio quality better.
Yeah.
But you also could do chapter skips because the laser could just bounce around.
Yep.
And you could do that second, or in some cases, third audio track where you'd have the commentary and then an isolated music track.
Sure.
It was leaps above VHS. Yeah, you had the limit to the hour aside, but for all the pluses you got, that was a really small deficit, man.
That's true.
Small deficit.
Now, I take it you got a chance to watch the episode on protect the British.
I don't think I saw that one.
Okay. Anyway, back in the Cold War, in the 80s, the British government made basically
Duck and Cover, or their version.
Their version, but this was stuff that in the event of nuclear war, the TV would go black, and then you would hear an announcement, and then the BBC would just play these over and over and over again.
In the event of nuclear war, there'd be an EMP, which would cause the TV to not work.
Yeah, but this is all
right. I'm just saying, technically, that's how that would work.
For those that did still work, that somehow missed the EMP or whatever.
I'm sorry, a bird just like fell down, so it caught my attention out the window.
But, survive and protect and survive or whatever the heck they were called. And those, to me, that era is fascinating to me. I love the Cold War stuff, and I especially love the 80s Cold War stuff because, you know, in the 60s you had the bomb shelters and everybody was going to survive and you had that kind of mentality. But by the 80s they were like, yeah, most people are going to die, but we may as well make this stuff for those that survive. Maybe they will.
Just last night I posted that Gleaming the Cube trailer to YouTube and you were yelling at me. The very first line of that Christian Slater has is, it's the 80s, man. We're going to be blown up in the next few years anyway, so we're never even going to get to be adults.
Exactly.
That's just the 80s encapsulated right there.
Yeah, that was the attitude. But looking back on that kind of public service announcement and things like that, it's amazing. And that to me would be a holy grail. I have no doubt in my brain that the U.S. government at some point made films like that for the U.S. and that stuff that's going to air in the event of nuclear war and it's never been released or talked about or whatever. I would love to see it.
Okay, I'm not changing the subject.
Okay.
Have you listened to the commentary track for Gremlins 2, The New Batch?
No.
With Joe Dante?
Nope.
Have you seen the movie?
I've seen the movie. It's been a while, but I've seen the movie.
Okay, do you remember when the Clamp Corporation is where everything is happening? He plays that videotape, ironically enough, on a 3/4-inch tape that he puts in to play over the Clamp TV networks. It's like, you know, because the world is ending, you know, Clamp would like to wish you a nice day, blah, blah, blah.
Happy Armageddon.
Yeah. Joe Dante on the commentary says he researched that. CNN wouldn't let him see it, but they have one of those.
See,
CNN has, and I'm sure Fox, MSNBC, I'm sure they all do, but CNN confirmed to him they do have a tape to play or a video to play in the event of the end of the world.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
So he said, while that was a joke in Gremlins 2, it's really one that's rooted in reality. So he, since they wouldn't let him see it, he kind of had to extrapolate what it could possibly say. But I want to see that. To me is my holy grail.
Yeah, I would.
I want that leaked CNN end of the world tape, man.
Or any of the end of the world tapes I would love to see. Or another tape.
I'm sure Fox's is, goddamn, Obama finally did it.
But, you know, I know that the government has also put together broadcast, for lack of a better word, we'll call them public service announcements, but really they're emergency service announcements. I know they've put them together in the case of alien contact, in the case of invasion from a foreign country, end of the world,
that's what the TV series, stuff like that. That's what the TV series Threshold was based on. The Carlo Gugino's character, that was her job, to come up with contingencies for everything.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, there's this great scene in the pilot. She's just walking her dog, and a helicopter lands, and he's like, Molly Caffrey, you have to come with us now. One of your plans has been activated. She gets all worried. Which one? He goes, Threshold. You're now the most important person on the face of the earth. Threshold is what to do in case of first contact with a hostile alien race. Yeah, you don't ever want to hear something like that Threshold has been activated, do you?
No. So, but at the same time, I would love to see some of these contingency tapes.
Especially now, if they haven't been updated.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if, like, CNN's is from the late 70s or something.
Oh, yeah. How great would that be?
It'd be Or it'd be funny. Can you imagine being the editor that has to update this every year to get some the new anchor to do new VO or
sure.
or something? Or if sure. it's somebody who hasn't worked at the network in 30 years or, that's or doing it.
How great would it be for the contingency tape for the end of the world to pop up and suddenly it's Walter Cronkite talking to you from, you know, and you're like.
Or if it's an actual tape, it doesn't. They go, we don't have a deck anymore. The world's ending. We're all digital. Damn it. We never transferred this over. Come on. Somebody who works at CNN has to have access to this.
Yes, and I know that Ben would love to see it.
I want to see it.
I mean, as much as we would, I know Ben would, and he'd probably end up doing an episode on it. So,
like I said, to me, when you asked him, he didn't necessarily have a Holy Grail. I do. CNN End of the World tape, since it's been confirmed that there is one.
Right.
I want to see it. And not a parody, not like Funny or Die doing their version. I want to see the actual one, because I guarantee it's going to be funnier than anything a comedian can come up with. Because it's going to be earnest. That's the problem. It's going to be so honest in what it is. We are sorry about the end of the end of the world. As you prepare for Armageddon, CNN wishes you a good night. Or something like that, you know?
Or if it hasn't been updated, we realize that it is the bicentennial, but...
But America has finally fallen to the evil red menace, the Ruskies.
McCarthy was right.
Stalin kill, destroy.
So, I mean, are there any technologies that out there that are outdated that you've been searching for? I mean, we talked about CED, which is cool in its own weird way, but...
Okay, well, I'll answer the question in a sec. The thing with CED is... Even if you find a working player, they had a lot of bands and things inside that sure. would make them run.
Sure.
Those things are so old, the rubber is so brittle.
They break.
That the odds are, if you find a CED player, the odds are it will not work anymore.
Right.
At least without some sort of repair that you have to do to it.
And by the way, when I first started editing tapes, Ball State, I did it on two U-Matics. Had I known that Ben wanted one of these things way back then, I would have kept one. And I might just have to get in touch with my old high school. They may still have one, too.
My friend Joe, who did It Came For Me on Midnight with me.
Right.
He worked at Channel 2. I worked with him there back before I got quit from there.
Right.
He found an old reel-to-reel Nintendo cereal commercial.
Really?
Yeah. And they wouldn't let him keep it, but they said he could borrow it if they could find a player to try and transfer it over to video.
Sure.
Channel 2 did not have any reel-to-reel players that still worked. 26 did.
Yeah.
So he loaned it to me, and I got one of the engineers. Basically, it was one of those, kick it till it dies. We got it transferred off to 3/4 inch, and then that reel-to-reel literally started. We're like, do you smell that? I don't think this thing's running again. This was its last gasp, was this fucking Nintendo cereal commercial.
Did you let the magic smoke out of the reel-to-reel machine?
Yes, the magic smoke was left out. We were all like, you smell burning plastic too, right? They're like, yeah, I smell burning plastic too.
But yeah, I remember, I mean, even at 25 in Evansville and stuff, I mean, just stacks of U-Matic machines.
It was like digital reel to reel. When they were cleaning up, remember the storeroom at 26 where they had all the sure. beta cams sure. and all that? Remember all those like film canisters that they had up along the one wall?
Yes.
Well, they were throwing those away, so I took a couple home, just like, you know, a Cheers episode, a Roseanne sure. episode, a Hercules, shit like that. And they're on film, but not like a regular film. You have to it's a digital film projector.
Huh.
And I asked our old boss about it, and she's like, we haven't had one of those for a decade, so I don't know what you're... So I still have a Sirens episode, that female cop show with Lisa
right,
Snyder from
the
90s.
It, yeah.
I have one episode of that on digital film, reel-to-reel in my basement.
Wow.
Just because. I kept it just because. I can't play it. It's absolutely useless to me. It probably has no resale value, but I like it.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, you remember a while back you gave us the Dark Crystal on Laserdisc.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't have a Laserdisc.
You thought
player.
It was the LP. I hand this to you. I'm like, your wife likes Dark Crystal. Like, you're like, yeah, we can still play this. I'm like, it's a Laserdisc. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Well.
Then I looked at it, and it's a Laserdisc across the top, and I'm like, well, I'm a dumbass.
But well, and it also said special widescreen edition. You don't normally need widescreens for LPs, soundtracks.
Yeah. But, well, did you notice what we did with that?
No, I haven't seen where it is.
I'll show you. It's upstairs. It's in a frame.
Oh, nice.
And it's on our wall.
Very nice. Because, or it's like, have you seen the movie SLC Punk?
It's been a while, but yeah, I did.
Okay, it takes place in 1985. And one of the characters, the one who's rich, he's always showing off all the new stuff he's got. And he holds up a Laserdisc at one point. He's just holding the disc so you can't see what movie it is.
Right.
And he goes, if you can believe it, there's a movie on here. You know, like you said, there's a movie on a disc.
I'll tell you one thing that I would love to have. I would love to have a mini disc deck.
Yeah, but what would you play with it?
Well, nothing.
I mean, there's how much shit came out on mini discs?
No, you don't understand. I'm not looking to play on mini discs. I'm looking for a recordable mini disc deck. I would put promos and crap on mini disc, like I did back in the old AM radio days.
Oh, those big 8-tracky things where you would, can't remember the.
Well, no, those are carts.
Carts. Yeah, the word fell out of my head.
Those are analog carts. No, when I was at WUEV, most of the promos were either on mini disc. Or they had a Digicart, and oh man, a Digicart was just the shit. It was a big hard drive with a little bit of, you know, MP3 playing and queuing.
Yeah,
basically is what it was. I mean, I've got.
Well, because
you're looking at the screen now. That's basically a Digicart.
Well, because now I'm not sure if they still do this, but like back when I worked at Channel 2, I can't remember if 26 did this or not. You know, like when the news open comes out and you're like, you know, at the beginning of the news?
Oh, yeah.
By the time I got quit from there, that was all digital. It was all on, you know, the video.
On hard
the audio.
Drive, right.
Right. But at Channel 2, which I was working out of the earlier 2000s, they had a CD.
Oh, yeah.
You know, depending on what different kind of music, you'd select different track. Well, Joe, that same guy I was telling you about from Beyond Midnight, he was running audio one day and... during lunch, because you know you did the 6 o'clock, then you go to lunch and you're getting ready for the 10. They were listening to like a metal hits of the '80s in the control room. You already know where this is going. Well, he forgot to change the CD, so there's this one newscast. The graphic comes up and the beginning of Alice Cooper's Poison. Starts playing and you just hear shit. And he's quick throwing the CD. He whips it across the room and gets the right one in.
Now
at five, your balls just dropped.
Yeah, at Channel 5 they had all of their opening on a Digicart, and it was you know the 2000 whatever version of Digicart. So it was again huge hard drive, probably couple terabytes, and then a very simple interface where you could select the track and play it. And what was it, and it was hooked into the board, so you could cue it with the audio board even. But what was hilarious was not only did they have all of their opens and closes and promos and stuff like that music on this Digicart, we had tons of space left over once you load literally every piece of audio in
that you need
plus more.
did you ever play with the one at 26?
Oh yeah, but I mean we would load it up with all kinds of other stuff, novelty songs. We would bring in CDs from home and just drop them.
Yeah, yeah, the one at 26. I remember Ben, not Ben from Audio Archive, but the Ben we worked with, he'd have to scroll through and there'd be like Chumbawamba songs and all this in there, I guess, just in case you...
Well, just to take up space, because again, this thing, like I said, these things were like 2 terabytes, which at the time was huge.
It's still not bad.
It's still pretty dang big. But I mean, you know, like at five, they would have all of their Olympics music on there. For some reason, the CBS affiliate had all of the NBC Olympics music loaded on theirs, well, and stuff like that.
Did you ever see like just, I mean, These things can take a lot of damage. The old like TV equipment,
sure,
they can take a lot of punishment. Did you ever see that one day the Channel 26 control room went out? Just everything stopped working. They couldn't get anything in the TD board to power up.
Nope.
So this might have been after you got quit.
This was after I was gone. Yeah.
So you know they're basically running the TD board out of one of the temp. I think out of master control actually.
Okay.
Which is a pain in the ass for anyone that's ever worked in TV because now the master control guy is running three jobs. But when the engineers picked the TD board up, all the spider webs and the dried soda, there were full Cheetos in there. And you just, how do you even, how do you get a fucking Cheeto in there? How do you do this?
Well, those TD boards, in order to repair them, number one, rerouting those things was not uncommon.
You saw that, and I don't mean literal spider web. That spider web of cords they had behind there, it was nuts.
Oh, it was insane. But anytime you see those big boards, like if you're watching TV and you see a TD board, in order to get inside those, they lift up like the hood of a car.
Yeah, they just...
Right, and all of your wiring is exposed behind all the buttons so that you can literally unplug and replug whatever you want
without having to like be on the floor and going underneath like working on a car.
Exactly. And it was I would see TDs with them at lunchtime lifted up so they didn't get any food on the buttons, but they would be using that center with all the wires
to have all the bread falling in and shit.
Right. And they would be sitting there using that as their table. So I have no doubt that there were potato chips and Cheetos and mice and literal spider webs and all kinds of other stuff in there.
But see, the thing that surprised me and even surprised the engineer was just how much dried soda was caked in the bottom.
Oh, tons.
And you just go, you'd think this is electronic, soda plus sugar, that it would have shorted this shit out.
Yeah, no, they can take a beating.
Yeah, and like I said, I've got that TD board sitting, not that exact one. I've got the one from Master Control, the backup one. It's in my basement right now.
Well, good.
I really do want to hook it up to make the world's most complicated remote control ever with the fader bar and everything, man. Yeah.
And
I am that stupid.
Is that the one that has some of the effects built into it?
Oh yeah, it's got all the effects buttons and you know, I could star wipe if I could get this hooked up. I'd like star wipe whenever you change channels or something.
If we ever do a Lost in the Static video thing, I want star wipes everywhere.
Because it is the best wipe.
It really is. The star wipe is the best wipe of
all. It's the Charmin of editing.
I mean, oh man. God.
But okay. Like antiquated technology, I don't even, antiquated is the right word for that, really. Outdated technology.
Yeah, that'll work.
All three of my LaserDisc players still work. They still work just fine. I mean, one of them has a drawer issue. You know, you basically have to, the drawer doesn't like to catch when you're putting it back in.
Ah, okay.
So you kind of got to hold it in until it catches. And, you know, so that one's dying, but that probably is just a little band that's pulling it back and forth is wearing out. So that's probably something I can fix.
Yeah, go to Radio Shack and get little bands.
I once bought a dead LaserDisc player from Goodwill. Didn't power up. You know what it cost to fix? A 75-cent spark.
A fuse, a little.
I was gonna say spark plug, and I knew it wasn't the right word.
Spark plug.
Yeah, spark plug.
It's the world's only diesel powered.
but it was just a little 75-cent fuse from Radio Shack.
Yeah,
and it worked. It still works to this day.
Sweet.
You know, I mean, I do look at that old technology, or the old video game technology. I don't mean Atari and stuff. Like if you find the old Odyssey. Or something like that. I love finding those at Goodwills, man. Just like Ben, I'm a thrift store junkie.
Oh, yeah. I love the thrift stores. But, you can find stuff from the old Odyssey to the Intellivision. I was amazed to still see Intellivision here and there.
But you know what they're doing now?
ColecoVision. What?
The Goodwill specifically is making those harder and harder to find.
They won't accept them as donations anymore, for one thing.
No, they'll still take them. But they know they're worth something. So, because I asked, like, I can't remember what it was, like a ColecoVision or something, in their back room when, you know, one of the employees was coming out. And I'm like, you know, when that gets priced, I'd like to know what that is. She goes, oh, that's going online.
Yeah.
They have an eBay store. Anything that they know automatically is worth money never hits the floor.
Right.
It goes online because they know this is worth a ton of money. That irritates me that the thrift stores are now just trying to, I mean, I get it. They're trying to make the most that they can. Fair enough. But that's irritating for people. Even one of the video game stores here in Green Bay, I'm almost asking, Atari Jaguar, Sega CD, something like that. I'm like, you guys never seem to have any of that. He goes, oh, we get that stuff in all the time. It goes right onto the website. That's irritating that shit never even hits the floor. That it's, we know this is worth money, so it's eBay. That bugs me about the whole thrift store thing. That's cheap, man. That's fucking cheap to pull that crap on me. You know, so basically, oh, the floor, you just get the cast-offs. Yeah. You just get the stuff that's not worth nothing.
Or what I see more often than that is they'll not only put it on the website, but they'll put it in the case. There's always a display case up by the counter jockey with all this, the really cool stuff in it. And you're like, ooh, and he's like, yeah, it's only $4,000.
The worst one is where, I mean, this thing was reasonably priced, except they wrecked it because they had to put the price tag on it. A newspaper from the sinking of the Titanic. They put the price tag on the pulp.
Why did they put the price tag on the pulp?
Because they're idiots. And I'm like, you realize that is never going to come off.
Right.
And basically you're going to have to just tear that corner off.
Yep.
You wrecked the value because you couldn't just like put a little tag that sat on it, you know, $20 or something like that. It had to have a PC code on it. It's the same thing. They got a huge donation of comic books at our local one
about
a year ago.
Every single one of them did.
Every single one, sticker on the cover. So they were all the same price. You couldn't have put up a banner that just said, comic books, 25 cents. No, it had to be because they're like, well, we have to scan the UPC for our records. Well, I don't want any of them because they're all worthless. I'm never going to be able to get that sticker off without one, tearing the cover, or two, leaving sticker residue.
You
wrecked the comic.
I have two bits of video game history that a friend is holding on to for me. It's Berserk. I have an Atari 2600 cartridge of Berserk in the original box, factory shrink wrapped.
I have like six of those.
And then the other one is Warlords.
I'm the one holding those for you.
No, you're not.
I have both of those shrink wrapped in my basement. Multiples.
Those are yours. Mine, the ones that I got are with Bill right now.
Because I'm like, I have the same. I've also got a Star
but what's,
Frontiers
what's,
or something.
What's hilarious is I showed these to Bill and he goes, they're worth something. I'll put them up on eBay. And I'm like, sure, go right. I know. Actually, I don't remember if it's Warlords or Berserk, but the one that comes with the comic.
They're still not worth crap. They're so common.
I know.
Because those, by the time the comics were in there, it was starting to boom.
Here's the point. This is the funny part was he immediately gets them and he's got this nice little thing that on his smartphone that will scan the barcode.
Right.
And it will go and tell the price and everything. And he just grabs the box and he turns it over and he looks through his
smartphone. Does it come up with the factory price?
He looks through his smartphone and looks at it and he goes and he picks it up and he looks around and he goes, there's no barcode on this. There's no barcode on this box. And I'm like,
no, there isn't.
Yeah, they came out pre-barcoding products.
Don't you remember the little sticker gun? Chunk chunk.
Yeah.
$34.99. Chunk chunk. And it had that little like bow tie shaped price tag.
Right. Prior, you know, there
People
was
don't
a
realize
time.
Grocery stores used to, every item was priced. It wasn't just, see, this is what I'm talking about, man. People get lazy, they get used to the way it is, and they don't realize the way it used to be.
Which is why they should go take a look at the Oddity Archive.
Absolutely.
And take a look at the old stuff.
I wish we could have kept talking about. I'm sorry. I thought he was cutting out like crazy.
Yeah, oops. I don't know. That was just you, because he didn't sound that bad to me, but we will go with it. And we are going to have Ben back on when we can. We'll work it out with him. But definitely BlipTV/Oddity Archive. Or YouTube/Oddity Archive, or it's weird. I went on Blip and I searched for Oddity Archive, and they didn't come up. But if you
Blip
search
is
for,
really gay sometimes on how it will bring stuff up,
right? But
like, yeah,
if you search YouTube for Oddity Archive,
otherwise if you go to my Facebook page, I linked I think his Max Headroom video on that, and you can go to his page from there.
But yeah, he's an amazingly nice guy and a lot of fun, and his show is absolutely hilarious. And like I said, I got enthralled.
And informative.
Yeah. And I got enthralled and sat down and watched every single episode.
I was too. I think you and I were doing that the same night because we both discovered him at the same time, and I think we just kept watching.
Definitely. We'll see you guys next time.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.